If you heard Lauren's homily last week, you know how she spoke about the recurring theme of bread that keeps popping up in our Gospels of late. And I must admit, I have had this overwhelming desire to stand up here and simply say, ditto to all she said last week, and then sit down. But at the risk of sounding like an employee of St. Paul's Delicatessen, this morning I'm slicing the bread one more time. Let's begin by looking at the first five words of today's passage. I am the living bread. What does this mean? How is bread living? And how is Jesus bread? I don't think anyone believes that Jesus means he has become a loaf of bread. What Jesus does mean is that he is the living bread. Jesus is speaking to a large crowd that sought him out, that came into the wilderness to find him, that made a pilgrimage to see him instead of going to the city of Jerusalem for the Passover, that was fed by him from only five fish and two loaves of bread, that has wanted to take him by force and make him their king. In other words, Jesus is speaking to a crowd that has felt the pangs of some deep longing within themselves and glimpsed the possibilities of true satisfaction in Jesus. But as so often happens, they have misplaced their longing. They have placed their longing on King. Jesus wants them to see that their true longing is for bread, living bread. John wants us to see into Jesus and through Jesus that our real longing is not for kings, not for things that pass away. Our true longing is for things that endure, that are imperishable. Light, truth, life, love, loyalty, kinship, abiding in God, hearing and responding to God's voice, to God's call. The bread of this life, even the miraculous manna of the wilderness, makes possible only life that is perishable. Yes, it feeds us for today, but one day we will all die, no matter how much of the bread of this life we eat. I think it's very interesting to look back to Jesus' time and understand that bread was 50% of the calories eaten each day by the peasant folk who were Jesus' followers. And each day's food was earned that day and was just enough to survive for that day. Bread was life. So Jesus offers himself and living bread as lenses to help direct the gaze of our longing toward that which truly satisfies. So when Jesus makes this analogy, he is trying to have the crowd gathered around him identify with something they are familiar with. This is the language that the ancient world can understand. This is to say, Jesus does not mean that we are to understand these as literal, actual statements. Eat my flesh and drink my blood are lenses through which we are to see the relationship Jesus wants us to have with him and the one who has sent him. One of the key words in the middle of this story is the word abide. We encounter it in Jesus' statement, those who eat my flesh and drink my blood abide in me, and I in them. In Greek, this word means to remain, to stay. It means to be in an ongoing, intimate relationship of love and trust. You and me, I in them. It is the intimacy of contact, of togetherness, of literally being one body by being joined through eating flesh and drinking blood. That's the metaphor, oneness. And whoever eats this bread and drinks this wine, whoever enters into this relationship of spiritual identity, will live forever in that spirit of love. When Jesus told us to eat his flesh and drink his blood, he was telling us to feed our hearts and souls and minds on his humanity and to revitalize our lives with his life until we are filled with the life of God. There are many more layers of meaning to our gospel reading that we could talk about this morning, but I'd like to talk about just one more, namely the Eucharistic implications of the text. What is really interesting is that the Eucharistic meaning of today's gospel reading appears nowhere near the time of the Last Supper. In fact, of the four Gospels, John is the only one that doesn't have a narrative account of the Lord's Supper. However, the imagery and message are clearly present here in this, the sixth chapter of John. So while the primary meaning of our reading is not about the Eucharist, its Eucharist overtones are undeniable. And it's quite interesting that John chooses to bring his teaching about the Last Supper not in the narrative of the upper room, but in the story of the fishes and loaves on a hillside near Bethsaida by the blue waters of the Sea of Galilee. From John's point of view, the communion table and this impromptu picnic on the seashore are just alike, in that we may taste and touch and handle the bread and wine which brings us Christ. He believes that Christianity would be a poor thing if Christ were confined to churches. It is John's belief that we can find Jesus anywhere. It's not that he belittles the sacrament, but he expands it. So we find Christ at his table in church and then go out to find him everywhere where men and women meet together to enjoy the gifts of God. Last week, as a hospital chaplain at Rex Apex Nursing and Rehab Facility, I was sharing communion with an Episcopal patient. She is totally bedridden and has been for years. She cannot use her hands, so I always dip her wafer in the wine and then place it on her tongue. She said, "Oh, that wine is strong." And I was a bit alarmed at first, but after questioning her, she said, "No, that's a good thing. It really emphasizes that Jesus is truly inside of me, and that gives me peace. He feeds my soul." I began with a remark about being an employee of St. Paul's Delicatessen. Today, our blue plate special is soul food. Amen.